Hey everyone, welcome to another exciting episode of the Scratch a Track podcast presented by the Dune Grim Show. I am the Dune.
And I am Grim. And today we are going to discuss Nonagon Infinity by King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard.
Man, that was a mouthful, my friend.
Oh, a great.
Well, this is, you know, this has been one of our most prolific, I guess, bands that we've discussed on this podcast. We've done first impressions of KG and LW. We did a scratch a track episode of Polygon Guanaland.
Yep.
And now we're doing Nonagon Infinity. And if everything goes right on Monday, we should have come out with an episode on Butterfly 3000, their newest album. And So many of you who are fans, I'm sure you've already liked, subscribed, and commented below. But for those of you who haven't, why don't you just go ahead and
like, subscribe, and comment below.
Do that. Because if you're a King Gizzard fan, trust me, we're going to have more stuff. And the biggest reason I say we're going to have more stuff, Grim, is because these guys put out albums, like, it seems like every couple of months.
Dude, like, they do.
It's insane, man.
I want to say friend of the show and producer Forrest was probably the first person to tell me about King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard, but not the last. And since then, I believe I've listened to their entire catalog.
It's a big one.
If you look at them starting as like 2010, so we'll say they started in the 2010s, right?
Yep.
I don't think there has been a more important band who has come up since that time. I really don't. It's amazing how prolific these guys are in terms of like what they put out. They put out things in all kinds of various styles and genres. And the thing is, it's all good. Like,
yeah,
I've at times just listened to them and just like let the next album come out or come up. And it's good. Like they're fucking really like brilliant. I don't know. I don't have too many bands who I think of as fondly as these guys. Just totally fucking unbelievable. Hmm. Unreal.
Well, their albums are different. At the same time, a lot of them carry like a theme. This one is extremely unique, but they do cool things. Cause like, just like we just did with KG with LW, those albums, if you play in succession, just go right into each other.
Yeah.
And you're like, wow, that's pretty amazing.
Well, and it's funny you say that because the interesting thing about this one is that if you were to, now you couldn't do it with like a record, but if you were to do this digitally, it would fucking just loop around itself forever, which kind of goes with the title Nonagon Infinity, which I believe a Nonagon is a nine-sided figure.
Yep.
And it's, I feel like this was the first album of King Giz and the Liz Wiz that I like really got into. And you're just like, holy shit.
Yeah. Well, mine was Polygon Guanaland. And I think when we posted,
I love that. Yeah. One. That's my favorite one. But
yeah, when we posted that album, I think we may have asked like what album we should do next or what one was people's favorites. And I think this one got the most votes, I think, of any other album, probably besides Polygon Guanaland. So again, if people are out there, let us know what your favorite album is. Also, they have so many albums and there may be people listening to this podcast for the first time. Let us know and let them know, like, what's the album you would start with?
We will do an episode on where do I start with King Giz, because I mean,
but why don't you
holy
just go ahead
shit,
and
if there's a band to do that episode with, it's this band.
This is this one. Yeah.
But I mean, they're phenomenal artists. And the thing is I really want to see them live. But every like live performance I've seen, I mean, they're spot on, and They bring something to the music world that I think has been missing for a fucking
long time. Yeah. Well, I think a fan of our show, Miss Carolyn L. I forget your last name because I think you switched your
Lozon.
Your YouTube handle to something else. But I know you have seen them live, and why don't you give us a little insight in the comments,
please,
to what that show experience is like? Because they were supposed to play at Red Rocks here last year. Obviously, that didn't happen, and I think they might be scheduled to play this year, but of course I'm going to be gone during that time, so I won't be able to see them. But anyways, yeah, if people have seen them live, let us know what those shows are like, because here's the thing, you know, at least with this album and KG and LW and Polygon to Wonderland, those albums, I would have a hard time breaking songs away, because I think of those albums as such a whole, especially this one where everything flows into each other. So I'm curious, at their live show, is it just like, hey, we're just going to play this album, or do they pick specific tracks?
Yeah.
And do they play, is it just like one sort of big jam session where they play songs into each other, or do they take breaks? Like, I'd just be kind of curious as to how they go about their shows. It may be different,
I don't know how to say this. I don't want to single anyone out, but I mean, this seems to be like the brainchild of Stu McKenzie, right? For the most part. And I think Stu McKenzie is a fucking genius. I mean,
he gets writing credit for, I think, most, if not all.
God damn. Like, I don't think I've listened to an album of theirs that I don't like. I mean, they're all so different, right? But it's funny because my eldest son, Ben, like, he's always like, dude, my favorite King Gizzard album is Fishing for Fishies. And so last time when we were driving up north, we listened to Fishing for Fishies. And I'd listened to it before, but like kind of like half-heartedly. And I listened to it like really listening to it with Ben in the car. And I'm like, God damn. This is a phenomenal album. And this is like the one that I brushed aside. I mean, I listened to like Sketches of Brunswick East more than that. And that's like their, like, what is it in Spinal Tap when they're doing like their free jazz thing?
The Jazz Odyssey.
Jazz Odyssey. That album is like King Gizzard's Jazz Odyssey. But the thing is, it's also awesome. I mean,
yeah. Well, so I'm actually looking. So last year, I believe it was when they released KG
and LW.
Or it might have been LW, because LW was earlier this year, right? LW was earlier this year, pretty sure.
Oh, maybe. Okay.
Yeah. So they also released a live album, Live in San Francisco 2016.
Oh.
And I'm looking at the track listing there in, I would say about half of this album makes that cut. They start with Robot Stop.
Okay.
But then instead of going into Big Fig Wasp, which they do in this album, they actually put a song called Hot Water in between.
Okay.
And then they go from Big Fig Wasp into Gamma Knife into People Vultures, which is, you know, those songs go in order here. And then it looks like they take a break from anything else on this album until you get to Evil Death Roll. It looks like the second to last song they might play. So I haven't listened to that live album. I just should definitely listen to that, because
I'm actually going to too, now that you say that, because every live performance I've seen by them, like on a radio station or something in a studio,
pretty badass.
Just been phenomenal.
Yeah. Well, and you know, I guess kind of going back to this album and the whole idea of it, you know, being a constant loop, which is pretty badass. One thing that I feel like for the concept of this show, this will be one, I think, a little difficult for us to do, because it's like you're taking like sort of like this section out.
Well, sure. But we've done Dark Side of the Moon. So
we can do this. But when I'm listening to their albums, I'm not paying attention sort of to like what song I'm on. It's hard to tell. It's hard to tell sometimes because sometimes it could be like it could be one. It could be one 10-minute song or 5 2-minute songs. Like you don't like. They mask the transition so well.
I know, and that's the part of it where I have just the utmost respect for them because. They just do what they do and they do it so fucking good. I mean, that's why I mean, for my money, which isn't much, but for my money, this is the best band out right now. No question. I just can't think of another band who could pull this shit off.
They're putting out a lot of material. Like you said earlier, it's quality material. It's not like,
yeah,
it's like,
it doesn't
it's like you
suck.
Put on the album. Yeah. It's not like you put on the album. And you're like, oh, they rushed this one out.
Oh yeah. And you think about that, especially with KG and LW. I mean, that would have been a perfect platform for one of those albums to suck. But the thing is, neither one of them sucked. They were both awesome. And they made it so that one looped right into another. And you're just like, dude,
yep.
You win. Like, right. World was waiting for a fucking band like this. And
I love it when people kind of do that sort of stuff. They do the creative stuff. Even when you're listening to one of their albums, it's such an experience. And they may go into some jam or riff or sound, and you know, you hear it in that song and then it comes back later in the album multiple times, and it's like, you know, or it's you hear a little riff or something in the beginning and then later in the album like a whole song is based off of that. It's like it's almost like foreshadowing, right?
Mm-hmm.
And it's so cool when bands, you know, think of stuff like that. And this is a weird analogy, but like the show Arrested Development, right? Like there's so many things in that show where
these parts.
Yeah, there's so many things in that show where you don't catch the first time, mm-hmm. or it is foreshadowing for something that's going to happen later. And until you rewatch the show, it doesn't mean anything to you the first time you see it. And then you hear it again and you're like, oh my God, that makes perfect sense. You know, Stu said he was like, especially with this album, it is just like one big song.
Yeah.
You know, it's essentially what it is.
Now, one thing I would like to talk about was the recording of this particular album. So
you have the floor.
This album was recorded in Daptone Studios in Brooklyn.
Really?
Okay. Yeah.
Okay.
Now I would not have expected that in a million years. So I read this, right? And then I looked up Daptone Studios.
Mm-hmm.
And I watched a couple videos of, you know, what they do and how they do it. Dude, at Daptone Studios, the most they can offer, because everything there is completely analog, because the whole mission, or I guess, you know, if they have their mission statement, which I kind of hate, like mission statements and all that shit, but
such a hater,
dude, Daptone's mission is basically to record like the best fucking soul records of like this generation. And I would say that they've done it, because when you think of what's been recorded at Daptone Studios, aside from this album, I mean, it's some amazing stuff. It's super soulful, and the way they do it, I mean, it's all like old soul records used to be recorded. Like when we talked about, for example, Brothers being recorded at Muscle Shoals.
Shoals, yeah.
Dude, they have a fucking house band. They have singers. I mean, like they do it upright. So dude, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard records this album here. Now, one thing I will say, when I watched this video on Daptone Studios, the gentleman narrating the video, and his name escapes me at the moment, said everything we do here is analog. The most that we can offer people is a 16 track tape recording.
Right.
If you want to do something other than that, if you want to record it onto Pro Tools, you got to bring your own rig in, because right. that's not what we do. We do this. So this would lead me to believe that they recorded this album on 16 tracks, which is
unless they brought their own shit in.
Yes, and that I do not know, but I will say, even if they brought their own equipment in, it's amazing. But I kind of think that based on how these guys are and what they do, mm-hmm. that they probably just did what they could do there.
Yeah.
And this leads me to the next section, I guess, of this, which is like the reception of the album.
Okay. What was the reception of the album?
Well, a lot of people had a good thing to say about it, but here's...
But there's always one...
Yep, and I will tell you about the one that I think is a real dickhole, and that is Matthew Coakley of The Triangle, who called this a mediocre album and musically gritty, heavy lo-fi garage rock aesthetic, and created a never-ending loop of an album where all the songs flow directly into one another. So, to you, Matthew Coakley, who I think you're a fucking moron, I have to say...
What the fuck is that shit?
Yeah, I mean, I guess it certainly isn't for everybody. I don't know what kind of... You know, music that dude is into. I mean, you know, you're not going to make tunes that, you know, everyone likes. I mean, you know, Led Zeppelin didn't do that. They left that to the Bee Gees.
So. That is correct. But at the same time, to call this, you know, I get that, like, not everyone's going to like that. That's fair. I totally understand that. But to call this album mediocre, tell me what fucking instrument you play and what album that you made, because I don't think it's this one. Because, dude, this is a fantastic album. So, fuck you, Matthew Coakley.
Yeah, all right. So, I'm going to reach out to The Triangle, see if they would like to sponsor our show, maybe bring Matthew on and have him as a special guest.
You know, in all honesty, I've never even heard of The Triangle, so...
Neither have I, so...
Yeah, so I don't think that matters.
We'll see.
But I just think that's a shitty comment about this album.
Yeah.
Well, my personal opinion.
Somebody's job. So, well, I think, at least on the Dude and Grimm show, we dig it. I'm sure a lot of you
dig
it as well. Because if you're listening this far, you must still be a big fan. But... I always find that, at least with a lot of their albums, and Stu even said this when he was talking about the lyrics, you know, lyrically is like, it's supposed to be, you know, fantasy. It's like you're thrown into a world, which, you know, links up to reality, but doesn't necessarily. You're stuck in this science fiction loop. But sort of the way whenever I put on one of their albums, first of all, everything seems to be like this upbeat sort of trip.
Yeah,
and I just feel like I feel like you're basically like in a video game and you're like racing through different worlds or something, almost like you're in Zelda. And it's
I think that's a really good way to put it.
Yeah, I agree.
And
I mean, that's just
that makes sense to me. But I like the game.
Yeah, it's a good game. I'd definitely like play it for sure. And here's the thing, with this album, I think Polygon Wonderland and probably a lot of the other ones, I'm sure some of you out there, some of the fans have probably taken like a real deep dive into the lyrics and sort of, you know, established, I imagine, some sort of a story or theme or idea. I have not done that yet with this album. There's a lot to it. But, you know, if people have ideas and thoughts on, you know,
please,
I mean,
share them.
I mean, I know people love to do deep dives into that that sort of stuff. And it's just fascinating what some people really, really come up with. And even some of the music videos kind of portray some ideas and some things, right?
Dude, I'm glad you brought this up. Do you want to talk about the music videos when we get into the tracks or right now? Because
let's do it when we get into the tracks.
Yeah, okay. Okay. Now, I do have to say that despite my my angered response to one critic's review, there were a lot of critics who really acclaim this album. So I don't want to make this seem like this was one person who had a bad review and I'm just like pissed about it, because a lot of people, including Tim Cedra from AllMusic and dude Jamie McNamara from Beat Route, like a lot of people really highly rated this album. Yeah. And I appreciate you because you have good taste.
Metacritic gave it 83 out of 100, man.
Dude, that's solid. I would have gave it more, but still 83. I respect that. Like that's legit.
Too legit.
So yes. I guess if
we want to talk about the videos, man, let's get into the tracks, because
that's kind of what I was thinking, dude. Yeah.
A trippy video. So Robot Stop.
Dude,
I thought it was amazing. It was amazing.
I did too. I thought it was an incredible video. Now, honestly, when I watched Robot Stop, the video, all I could think of is what you would have done with the Spiritual Divide video for more had you had the budget and more footage. Because there were parts of it to me that like echoed. That like echoed that.
It's funny you brought that up because I didn't even make that connection. I made the damn thing. So
I know. And dude, you were doing it like way before this.
Way before, with my Sony Hi8 camera and your footage of a graveyard from like an airplane or I don't know.
Which was really great. Yeah,
it was. But so the video, if you guys haven't seen it, definitely check it out. It's like this
really trippy.
It's like this 8-bit, 16-bit kind of trippy video, but it's like a journey kind of going through like this almost like a fractal world, right?
Yeah.
And there's different images and sometimes
like
objects,
the instruments
robots,
like make shapes and it's really cool.
Yeah, and at one point like there's like a robot insect and I feel like they like made a superior robot and then the robot comes alive and I think it eats, you know, the other robot, the smaller robot's head off or something. And
there's a lot going on there.
Yeah, there's a lot going on. So that please, if you guys have interpreted that, I would let's do a deep dive there in the comments. The only thing you really see from time to time is Stu McKenzie's face kind of singing the lyrics, kind of coming up in 8-bit, or it goes into like the robot's eyes and stuff and he's singing it. So it is it's pretty cool.
It's really trippy, but it's awesome.
Yeah. Now for the song itself though, I mean, just it just rocks right off the bat. Like there's no like warm up or anything. It's like we can like ease you into this album.
No.
Like it basically, you know, you bought the ticket, take the ride. That's it's
well, and it. I love the lyrics too, where they're like, fuck shit up. Mm-hmm. Like that for some reason I just
because they don't swear very often.
They don't.
Yeah.
But when they do, like it sticks out. And this is one of those. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely. So we move on to the Big Fig Wasp.
Big Wasp.
You know, and here's the thing. Again, I'm trying to think. I don't know if I ever really sat down until I sat down to do these notes where I'm like, oh, okay, that's where the transition is.
Yeah,
that's where this song becomes this song. So I'm like, oh, okay, that's interesting. But and again, a lot of times the transitions aren't clear because the sound, the space, everything is recorded in the way his vocals sound.
I know
it just moves right along and moves right into it, and so.
And that's why I really wish there was more information on like how this was this done just on the 16 track tape system at the studio. I would really like to know. And that's the nerd in me, right? That's the nerd in me. Like, how did you do the drums? How did you do the guitar? Like, all this stuff. Because one thing I think that's interesting is when you watch the videos, he's playing a 12-string electric for a lot of them, which makes sense with kind of that drone sound, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But anyways, yeah, not to defer too much, but it's interesting. I really wish there was more information on how this was done.
I agree.
And when you're, I mean, dude, when you think about like in college, like, God, we took this footage of Moore, which was nothing. Like, why wouldn't someone take this footage of King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizards in Daptone Studios, like doing an awesome album?
But. Yeah, I would do it, especially with all the recording devices we have literally in the palm of our hands.
Mm-hmm.
So, all right, moving on, I guess, track three, which, you know, these next two tracks are, again, interesting because they both have videos. In the videos, go
together,
pick up where the other one leaves off. So we have Gamma Knife, which itself is a great song. I mean, you know, you can at times, you know, break out like, oh, this is a good song, I guess, a little bit. But
sure. I agree.
You know, the video itself is really trippy. It's got this like, you know, the 60s psychedelic
dude, kind of video. It's like, it's like Stonehenge.
Oh, yeah. Where the demons live and the banshees dwell.
Yeah. Yes. Yeah, dude. It, to me, when I saw that video, I was like, oh, my God. This is what Spinal Tap would have made the video for Stonehenge if they could have.
Pretty much. Well, the feeling of it sort of has like a almost like a Magical Mystery Tour feeling, like the look and
but darker. And but darker.
With that. Well, it has that. Well, here's the thing. It's. I'm thinking more of a, from a production standpoint, like the,
oh yeah,
like
yeah,
that,
yeah,
that
yeah.
That B film sort of
yeah,
like,
sure.
Yeah, you know.
No, I hear you.
Yeah, we're really riding.
But it's like darker. Yeah. They're in the fucking big circle, and they're just
right. It's very cultish, right? Like, yes. Is this Jonestown? Yes. Is this the Jonestown band we're watching here? Because at the end of the video, they're like all dead and they're just laying kind of around in a circle and whatnot. So yeah, it's a pretty interesting video, but you know, with the song itself, you can sort of hear the transition because everything kind of drops out except for in the beginning. Then there's like the guitar and drums kind of play for a little bit.
And the harmonica.
That's okay. I was gonna ask you that. I thought that was harmonica, dude, in the background, yes, right? Yeah,
and they cool. Do such a good job with the way they recorded it, because it's like old blues harmonica where it's like a little nasty, you know. Dude,
it is.
I don't care. I'm gonna divulge. This is my favorite song on the album.
Oh. Okay.
No question.
Yeah. I'm a fan of it. I'm a fan of it.
Yeah.
Too.
I just for some reason I love that the harmonica just does it for me in that song.
It's great because the texture sort of blends in with the other with the sound that's, you know, the music that's happening too. So it's sort of there, but it's sort of almost masked, or it fits right in with
it. I don't know if they use the harmonica on any other tracks as I'm
I
thinking about it.
I didn't hear it. And
the way they use it is like so simple, you know, just that
totally. But it is.
Yeah.
Well, then that goes in just like the video
to People Vultures. Right,
People Vultures, which,
dude,
yeah,
the People Vultures video is fucking amazing because it's so weird. I love it.
It's really weird. You almost have to see it to believe it. But basically,
oh, I know.
The band is in this almost like a parade type float, right? But they're like the vulture. Yeah, and
they are the vulture.
They are the vulture. And then though you have the what I assume are the Big Fig Wasps, which are in song two.
Yeah.
Who are like kind of like coming and trying to attack the vulture and everything. And,
it's super weird, but I love it.
It's very weird. It's very weird. But again, it has a real sort of B film low budget feel to it. Definitely. But hey, you know, whatever, it's cool. And then what was I going to say? So yeah, with the song itself, you know, I swear there's in this song, there's a lot of riffs. There's some riff sound that is played earlier in the album, and they kind of bring it back in this one. I know they do it multiple times,
well,
you know, in different spots.
Yes, they kind of at the end of Gamma Knife, they do the riff for People Vultures, and then they play People Vultures, and then they do that riff again, and then they go into Mr. Beat.
Oh, Mr. Beat, which is interesting because that's the midpoint of the album. So track five, right?
Oh,
and dude, it's such a unique song on the album. It has
love that song,
really chill, funky feel to it. Mm-hmm. It's hard to describe, but it's very different than anything you've heard up to this point in the album, right?
And that's what I love. It just kind of drives along, and they get that. Those chromatic notes, it's one that I could just listen to over and over.
And I swear there's an organ, right? It's like a new element that's brought in. And just like we were saying with the harmonica, I believe this is the only song we really hear the organ in. Do we hear it anywhere else?
I don't think so.
At least not as prevalent as it is in this song, right?
Yeah.
Yeah. And even his vocals sound different. So the way I kind of thought about this, and, you know, I'm not trying to get too deep here, but, you know, the first four tracks, I feel like it's almost like it's going up this mountain and they're just like running up this hill.
The plateau.
Mr. Beat is the plateau. And it's like, we made it. And then after Mr. Beat, it's... roll even then yeah. the next song evil death roll
yeah,
like,
sure,
boom, that's when the death roll starts, and it's just like you start tumbling again.
Yeah, I hear you.
Sort of, you know, kind of picks up, right? So Mr. Beat, very, very unique song, and it's a standout for sure. I dig it. So then we go to track number six, which is Evil Death Roll, and roll
I think,
and
that's the longest one on the album, right?
7 minutes, 14 seconds. So by a couple minutes for sure. Where am I in my notes? Okay. Well, what's cool is he brings back the lyrics. Nonagon Infinity opens the door, which is what starts the album. So again, it's like, you know, we passed that midpoint, and now don't you love it? Everything just comes full circle. It's amazing, dude. It's amazing.
And for a song being that long, it doesn't feel that long because there's just so many changes within it, right?
Definitely. Yeah, definitely. Well, then we get to Invisible Face. And actually, this song has a little bit of funkiness to it, kind of like Mr. Beat. It's not as guitar driven in the beginning. In the middle, they kind of do this little jazz odyssey sort of thing. It's kind of weird.
You're right, but to me, that little jazz odyssey that they do with the beat kind of goes right into wah-wah because it's like...
Sure.
Well, you know, they get that jazz odyssey kind of beat. And that's the one thing I was going to say is, dude, the lyrics to Wah Wah are really bad because they're just like, wah, 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 wah. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, did you notice on Invisible Face, I think it's during the Jazz Odyssey part, if you're listening to it in headphones and speakers, it's going in a loop.
Yes.
And so, I mean, what a great way.
Like, I know.
They're gonna really just drive that point home.
Oh, and
And they do. Technically... So listen to this in headphones, or if you have two good speakers and you're listening to that song, the sound kind of shifts, just goes in a circle around the room. Very cool. cool effect done by also in a great song called Sunrise.
Yeah.
Sunrise. It's just impeccable. Yeah.
Oh, I don't know if you compare it to that. I feel like they're better, but I appreciate that.
Dude. Yes.
That means a lot.
Yeah. But yeah, like you said, goes into wah-wah, and there's sort of this abrupt transition after that jazz
odyssey.
You know, they let it go for a bit, and then they, like, boom, like, make this cut, and it's a interesting transition, I'll say the least.
And a road train.
Road train. Last track on the album, I mean, kind of. Is it? Is it the last track, or is it, or Grim, is it the first track, or is it somewhere in the middle?
Who knows? When I first listened to this album, I didn't know about the connectivity of it. And therefore, I didn't appreciate Road Train for what it is, because I just heard it stop and I was like, oh, well, all right. I respect that. So, but then once you listen to it like on a repeat loop and you know what it is, and Road Train stops and goes right into Robot Stop. And you're like, oh, fuck. Okay. You were definitely seeing a bigger picture than I was when I listened to this.
Well, when I listened to it, I thought, I was like, wait, is something messed up with my download?
Yeah,
is there another song?
I know, because it's almost abrupt, right?
It is abrupt. I didn't get it. Now, I'm probably going to piss a lot of people off by saying this, but... you know, there's that kind of nasty guitar riff, right? That's it's sort of harder and everything. That riff reminds me of the song Barracuda.
By heart?
Yeah.
Awesome. Yeah.
Dude, if you listen to those.
Yeah.
Because I listened to it right afterwards just to make sure I wasn't, like, you know, having an acid flashback.
Dude,
or something.
That shouldn't piss anyone off. Well, that's awesome.
Dude, it's always going to piss someone off. I mean, come on.
Yeah, that's fair. Yeah.
It's probably going to piss off freaking Matthew Coakley, right? I mean,
dude, fuck him anyways. But yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Yeah. So, all right, Grim, we're pretty much at the end. Actually, we are at the end of this. So,
yeah, we are. Now you're on the tee.
I'm on the tee.
So we can get that out of the way early. Mm-hmm. But
favorite song.
I will say.
Okay.
We have scratched a lot of albums, and there are a lot of them that are difficult scratches, but based on the way that this album was constructed and the fact that it's, you know, awesome.
Seamless and
repeats. This is a really tough one, and I'm interested to hear your scratch. So please, dude, put the ball down and, you know, take a swing.
So here's the deal. First of all, this takes a little explanation. First of all, let me tell you my favorite song.
Okay? Oh, I would love to hear your favorite song.
My favorite song is Mr. Beat, because it's so unique.
Yeah.
It stands out. It's that sort of maybe the tipping point of the album. Now, this is going to be an interesting one, because you want to know what song I'm going to scratch?
I do.
Mr. Beat.
What the fuck is that shit?
And I'm going to scratch it because I'm thinking of the album as a whole. And if I, it's not because I want to. I know, your mind's blown. WTF.
Dude.
But that's why I got to explain. Like I said, it's the point in the album where everything slows down and loses its flow, right? So if I had to pull a song off the album without losing its momentum, that would be the one that would go.
What the fuck is that shit?
I know, that's cool. And yet it's still my favorite song on the album, which is super fucked up, right?
That is. I don't even know what to say right now. Like,
speechless.
I know you're in Denver, but I feel like you just fisted me. Fuck.
Got big hands.
Fuck, man.
I know what your song's going to be, but go.
Oh, please tell me. What is my song going to be?
Wawa.
No, it is not.
No. Oh, shit. All right. What is it?
People Vultures.
Really?
Yeah, okay. Because, dude, when you think about it, think about this. The way People Vultures starts and the way People Vultures ends is exactly the same. And so for me, I could totally get rid of that shit and go right into Mr. Beat. Mr.
Beat.
Like, just do the intro, fuck People Vultures, go right into Mr. Beat, which is also one of my favorites.
Now, if you scratch the song, would you also scratch the video?
The video is amazing.
Right?
I mean, can't deny that. Yeah. The video is incredible. Yeah.
Can't scratch the video.
It is like one of the weirdest and amazing videos I've ever seen, which is what I like about most of their videos is I feel like this is a band where like they really just express their creativity and enjoy themselves and don't worry about what people think about it. Because if the people don't like it, like Matthew Coakley, fuck them, dude, you know?
Sorry.
Yeah, we don't need him.
And the horse you rode in on, yeah.
Oh, yeah. We don't need him. Go back to the triangle, whatever the fuck that is.
Go back to Jersey, you moron.
Yeah, they don't need him. I don't think, because I'm telling you, King Gizzard and the Lizard Wizard is going to be remembered as one of the most important bands that has ever been. I truly believe that. I really do.
Oh, this is the album I want them to remember me by.
Yeah.
Definitely.
So with that said, God, dude, I can't believe you scratched Mr. Beat. Like,
hey, it's still my favorite song on the album.
That dichotomy right there blows my goddamn mind. Like,
yeah.
I kind of have to like tip my hat to you because like, to be able to say that that's your favorite song, but at the same time, scratch it because of the album.
Yeah.
Like, I want to be pissed at you, but I can't because your logic is sound.
I have sound logic. Yes. I have a lot of other faults, but usually my logic is pretty sound. So.
Oh, dude. God, it's about to be like fucking Scanners because my brain is about to just go.
Exactly. Well, it is getting late, friends. We hope you enjoyed this episode. Please stick around. There's going to be many future King Gizzard and Lizard Wizard episodes. If you have not checked out Butterfly 3000, which came out likely on Monday, you should definitely give that a listen.
Please do, because I'm sure it's awesome already.
Yeah. And
but tell us what you would scratch. I mean, for God's sakes, like the dude basically just fisted my brain, but, you know.
Yeah, I did. I did. Or maybe it was the cocktails. I mean, who's to say? So on that note, ladies and gentlemen, thank you for watching. We can't wait to have you again here next time.
We can. King Gizzard
and Lizard Wizard. I'm sure they'll be coming out with an album soon, so we'll be talking about it. Until next time, time to go.
Dude Grimm Show. Scratch a Track is produced by the Dude Grimm. Additional music provided by Moore and the Timms. Copyright 2021, The Dude and Grimm Show.